Hey guys, Nate Clear, your host, the Non-Dell Influencers Podcast, as always, my trusty sidekick, Nick Krakowski. Today we have John Tallinger, Chief Growth Officer at Class Valuations. John, how are we doing?
Doing good, man. Another day in mortgage paradise here. How you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing well. So for our listeners, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things in terms of being a non-delegated correspondent, whether you're existing or you're thinking about moving into that channel. One of the things that we talk about in terms of an advantage of being a non-delegated correspondent is certainly more flexibility around choosing your AMC and how that kind of applies to the rest of it. So we're going to bounce around on those kinds of topics, strategic partnerships, what to look for, that kind of stuff. But before we get into it, John, it's nice to see you in long sleeves. It wasn't quite that experience last week down at the FAMP conference.
Yeah, it was toasty down there. you know, being in Michigan, we actually get all four seasons. So, you know, not necessarily great for the golf game, but we get to see, you know, we can see the different changes in weather and get to shake up your wardrobe a little bit.
No kidding, man. Well, Nick said that you carried them through the front nine and then the back nine, something happened.
You know, the heat got us all, and maybe the car girl may have played into effect a little bit there.
I think the heat, the car girl, you know, just trying to stay hydrated. You got to really stay hydrated out there, and you know, we ran out of water on the course, so we had to make do with whatever was available. But certainly had a great time. I think we definitely won in terms of enjoying ourselves and having a good clean time. So
yeah, I think so.
Well, to get things started, you know, we talked about, you know, kind of ahead of time. You know, there's kind of a difference, right? I mean, you have done a phenomenal job in your career in terms of, you know, expansion for Class Valuation. And, you know, a lot of that has been in the wholesale side of things. But, you know, moreover, it's afforded you opportunities to talk to brokers, large broker shops, and then kind of lenders. Can you talk to us a little bit about the approach with wholesalers and how that differentiates once somebody would make the you know, kind of the change over into operating as an independent banker?
Yeah. You know, I'll keep it somewhat brief, but we, you know, when we started at Class, we, you know, our primary, like our anchor customer was UWM, and they were, you know, smaller at the time. And so we sort of grew with them. But, you know, we didn't have any leg up. We didn't have any guarantees on volume or anything like that. So we had to go win those broker relationships one at a time. So, you guys know, you know, I learned a long time ago through some early failures that if you try to go out and sell something and your real intent is on selling, you're not going to get very far. You know, sales is all about relationships, about building trust. And so that's where we cut our teeth in the wholesale space, made a lot of great broker relationships. As time went on, you know, we started in 2009 and started working with other wholesale lenders, started continuing to grow those relationships with other brokers. And you know, in our space, just like any other space, if you perform well and you build that level of trust with, you know, with your clients you work with, it's going to carry on. It's going to get you other opportunities. So, you know, we started with a couple wholesale lenders and we started growing and got to the point where we were pretty much on almost everyone's wholesale approved list that was, you know, the bigger players in the space. And we did that for years and really, really just kind of catered to the broker space. You know, fast forward to now, our portfolio of clients is, you know, we're very fortunate. It's very, you know, well diverse. We work with credit unions, private money lenders, you know, some of the top banks out there, non-bank lenders. And then really the correspondent space is really picked up, you know, delegated, non-delegated. And like you said, the appraisal piece really kind of opens up, you know, when you're the correspondent lender, you know, your name, there's some more responsibility for you there. And so you have the option to choose, you know, kind of whatever AMC you want to work with. So for us, that was just a matter of, hey, if you're performing well and if you can, you know, build those relationships, you can kind of carry that over. So it could be a blessing and a curse. Wholesale lenders are going to kind of force the brokers to work with a certain group of AMCs. If you're a correspondent, you can choose who you want to work with. So that's been a, you know, really big, you know, growing opportunity for us to be able to service, you know, service, you know, brokers that have kind of transitioned to that correspondent role.
Yeah. And I mean, I know we see it all the time, right? We get people that ask us, and it's kind of, it's geographic, right? Dispersion. Some of them, it's a bigger, you know, selling point for than others. But a lot of it, like you're saying, John, I mean, it comes down to, okay, do I recognize them? Are they reputable? Am I going to get the turn time they're looking for, et cetera? And some of them, right, will in the wholesale channel, we know that they're like, hey, if this is located in XYZ city, I can't go with this lender because they don't have this AMC on that list. Therefore, I'm going to go somewhere else regardless of price. Are you still see that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a blessing and a curse. The larger you grow, you know, when we were smaller, you know, we really tried to present ourselves or put on, get, build the perception that we were bigger than we were. So we get the opportunity with, you know, with bigger lenders and bigger banks. We're at a scale now where we're, you know, one of the larger, you know, AMCs in the country. And that's again, kind of a blessing and a curse because, you know, sometimes smaller lenders or even correspondents might have the perception that, hey, these guys are too big and we're not going to be, you know, they're not going to view us as an important client. They're going to focus their energy on this bigger client or that bigger client. So for us, it's always been about, you know, building that, no matter how large we grow in terms of volume, it's a matter of, you know, making sure that every client has that personal level of service. So that kind of carries itself forward. You have to make sure that I always say we have to be the chameleon. Like we have to be able to, we can't treat, you know, this broker relationship the same way we treat this broker relationship. This broker wants to be communicated with this way. This broker wants to be communicated with that way. The other thing is when you get to a larger scale like us, you know, just, you know, scales of economy, you start to deal with, you know, we have more relationships, more appraisers, more volume to send those appraisers. So those outlying areas, we've gotten really good at those areas. Like for years, we weren't, you know, we weren't nearly as good as some of the boutique smaller AMCs in Maine, for instance. So, you know, went out and made a really strategic acquisition, and we acquired the top AMC in Maine, and they cover Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, and they're by far the best up there. So that went from a weakness to a strength for us. Now we go out and we market that, like, hey, you know, guys, look, in Maine, we have absolutely the best coverage, the best AMCs there, or I'm sorry, the best appraisers, best appraisal relationships there. So, you know, that's the tricky part, is being able to do a great job for essentially everyone. You have to be able to knock it out of the park in the really highly populated MSAs, like around Dallas. We've got to be great there, but you also have to be good for the client that has something way out in the sticks, way out in rural, you know, West Texas. You got to be able to turn that quickly, but also provide a good appraiser that's going to, you know, meet the term time, not have a bunch of revisions, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's definitely, especially, you know, in this market right now, being able to get those middle of nowhere appraisals done quickly and accurately is definitely key.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. I mean, certainly I know in the sticks and in Southeast is always been something that comes up when talking to brokers who are kind of teetering on that, you know, I don't know if I want to be a correspondent. And then you give them the option of, well, you know, do you like this AMC? Or you can work with whatever AMC you want. And even, you know, set up your own panel. You know, usually in the more rural areas, it helps them make that transition to the correspondent channel because they can pick their partners and they know who they want to work with.
Yeah. So on that end, you know, we got, you know, new guys and, you know, part of this podcast is, as you know, John, is educating the guys that are just getting started. And so for those listeners that we have on, what does that look like, right? We preach that, hey, you can go, you can select your own AMC. We talked a lot about what that benefit looks like to them. What does that entail? What do they need to do, like, in order to get, I guess, set up with Class? And to that end, what should they be considering when they're trying to, you know, establish, do I need one? Should I set up with five? What does that need to look like?
Yeah. So I think it's really, you know, what's going to give them the best level of trust. You know, we have a lot of, you know, correspondents or a lot of lenders and brokers we work with who, you know, use, you know, one specific AMC. That's their go-to. Some of them, you know, especially some of the larger shops that have, you know, maybe different offices in different locations and, you know, they have their favorites and they use, you know, a couple different AMCs. Sometimes they round robin. The panel thing is tricky, and I think there's definitely more, you know, there's much more of a regulatory spotlight on that now. So certainly, you know, being able to build a panel of appraisers is certainly something that, that can be done in the correspondent space. But, you know, you need to make sure that, you know, that you're educating about compliance there. You know, it, no matter what size the shop, they have to be able to, you know, it really has to be that direction in terms of if a correspondent wants, you know, the AMC to use a specific panel of appraisers, that direction can't come from anyone that's in loan production. It has to come from someone who's the compliance side or someone who's not related, who's not compensated, on a per loan basis. So making sure you're setting that up compliantly to make sure that when, you know, you get audited down the road, that you have your ducks in a row. And then really making sure that you're finding, you know, no matter what it is, if it's us or someone else, it's finding an AMC that you can rely on. You really need, what everyone in this world is looking for is consistency. You know, nobody likes a grab bag when it comes to business. You know, you want to know what you're getting, know what to expect, set clear expectations. In these markets, you know, you can expect appraisals are generally going to be, you know, going to cost about this much money, and that the turn time is going to generally be, you know, 4 to 6 business days. Some of these outlying markets, you know, knowing that they're going to be, you know, 8 to 10 business days or 10 to 12 business days, depending on where they are. And certainly you want to make sure that AMC has coverage in those areas and has, you know, a stable of good appraisers who know what they're doing, that are geographically competent, that know that market. So that you have a high level of confidence of what you're getting in return. So that's really important in picking your partner. You know, you don't want to just find, hey, that, you know, this AMC is going to give me this and this, but you know, they're just okay at these other things. I mean, there's, especially when you're a correspondent, you have the world to choose from. You can choose from, you know, any partner that you want or any partners that you want. Go find ones that are really going to roll out the carpet for you and check all those boxes for you.
Yeah. So Nick, I know one of the things we talk about kind of like in our top, you know, 5 things, right? Or you know, benefits of correspondent, and one of the things being the AMC selection. One of them is, you know, the service that you may be able to garner if you're able to direct a lot of that business. What do you see from your correspondents?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, the setting up those strategic partnerships is one. I mean, that they're always looking to go after is, you know, hey, you know, if we can commit, you know, X amount of business to somebody like yourself, you know, can we work on maybe a better turn time? Obviously, pricing is tough to negotiate these days, but at least turn times, just to provide a better service level for their realtors, partners, their title company partners, and their borrowers. You know, is that something that you guys see in the AMC space? Is with you know, larger correspondent shops, you know, helping out with turn times with a committed volume space, you know, play?
Yeah, what does that look like for you, John? I mean, right? I think you talked about it earlier. You said, you know, broker, you know, each broker can be different, each lender can be different. They got different ways to communicate, et cetera, et cetera. What does that look like? I mean, if somebody comes to you and they're like, John, class valuation, we want to do something unique. Is there room to do something like that?
I've got actually 2 great examples for you. So one being a correspondent lender that we've worked with in Indiana for years, and they are very price sensitive. Like they're in their market, they're competing against, you know, other lenders who are very competitive on price. So they want to be at a certain price point. They want to make sure that they are, you know, staying competitive with their competitors in terms of appraisal cost. Then at the same time, though, the panel of appraisers that they've, you know, that we've compliantly put into place for them, you know, it's a little tricky because some of those appraisers, you know, their fee that they want to get paid is pretty high. And so it's tough to have it both ways, you know, to squeeze, say, hey, we need to keep costs way down, but you got to use these appraisers. And you're working with a very thin margin where it's very tough to, you know, to be able to make any margin or run a profitable business there. So like that's kind of one end of the spectrum. But we've got another, you know, correspondent here locally in Michigan. They're in probably 26 states right now, but really, really good emerging. So they really kind of started in the broker space, and I would say the vast majority of what they're doing right now is correspondent. And I spoke with their CEO about a month and a half ago, and he was basically like, look, JT, we want to simplify this as much as possible for our team up front. We want to make it so we don't want to deal with, you know, having to come back and redisclose fees. So what he asked me for is, he said, hey, in the 26 states we're in, can you find a way to get us one price, make all the appraisals one price? I don't care if it's conventional, I don't care if it's FHA, I don't care if it's in Michigan, I don't care if it's in Nebraska, I don't care if it's in Florida, I want them to all be one price. So my team can quote one price and you guys are going to stick to that. So, you know, we did some kind of math and some data work behind the scenes and kind of looked at where their footprint is. And we came up with a fair price that's actually maybe a little bit higher. Like for instance, in Michigan now, they're going to pay a little bit more for every appraisal than they were in the past. And they're going to pay a little bit less, you know, in maybe Virginia than they were in the past, but they're getting, they can sit down and say, hey, every time every appraisal we order, it's going to be the same exact price every single time. And that process flow made life much easier for them in terms of disclosures and being able to get those loans kind of cranked through without having to worry about going back and forth and putting appraisals on hold. So what you really want to ask for is, first of all, your correspondent, you're working with the AMC partner. Don't be afraid to ask. We have to be the chameleon, and we have to be able to, build products, build a fee schedule that works for you and works for your team. So there is more flexibility out there in a lot of instances than you realize. I mean, and then we have some lenders that want us to, we actually even have some clients that want us to, right when the borrower pays for the appraisal, they want them to have the ability to put in, from a list of times, hey, which time slot do you want? Be able to schedule ahead of time. Hey, homeowner, here is, the dates, kind of like if you're looking for a serviceman for your GE refrigerator or something like that. Hey, Thursday 3 p.m. I want the appraiser, and when we get the order, it says Thursday 3 p.m. So we need to we have kind of a algorithm or software built that plugs in the right appraiser who's able to accommodate that time, and the fee's already set. So it is much more customizable from that standpoint than you realize. But a lot of partners, a lot of AMCs don't offer that. We've gone out of our way to ask for feedback. Ask, what do you want? How can we make this process as easy as as possible? At the end of the day, I can tell you right now, loan originators, they don't want, brokers, lenders, they don't want to deal with appraisal problems. They don't want to deal with going back and forth and redisclosing. So what can we do to make your life easier? Make the appraisal piece so that it's kind of a set it and forget it type of thing.
Oh, we say the same thing, man, right? People want to do business wherever there's going to be the least amount of friction, yeah. Right? It's like the least amount of friction. That's what we want to do. I'm happy to hear that you do so much on your tech stack in order to deliver that on our warehouse lending side.
We do the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. How easy can we make it? How dummy proof can we make this system so that we don't have any issues from the time that money leaves our account,
yep,
until it's being purchased by an investor?
Yeah. Cause right. I mean, the lender and our originators is just like you, John, right? Like you want them not focusing on figuring out where in the system I need to click the right box, et cetera, et cetera. And this is taking away from the time that I can be spending talking to that next realtor, that next borrower to get the next deal. Because, if our lenders are closing more business, that by and large is going to be better for us as well. So you talked about that appraisal panel piece. So as I understand it, they're, obviously dependent on your investors and what their requirements are, et cetera, but there's a way for them to establish their own panel, or can they also set up a panel within an AMC? What is that? How does that work? Or what does that look like?
Yeah. So really any lender has the ability, but I would say the majority of lenders have the ability to, dictate, to an AMC, as long as it's coming from the non-production side, can dictate to the AMC, especially if there's a specific market. Like if there's a specific market, some lenders we work with used to manage the whole appraisal piece internally. And they've moved away from that because it costs them a lot of money. Or maybe because of compliance reasons, they want to not have to manage that appraisal piece anymore. And they're going to go strictly to AMCs and third parties. They're going from using, a specific group of appraisers for a specific region that they're comfortable with, they're familiar with, especially, you get unique situations where you have a lender who's does a lot of new construction or a lot of renovation construction. And they want to make sure that they have a panel of appraisers that are, doing their construction loans, who are, appraisers who are familiar with, that market and really more specifically new construction or renovations in that specific market. So, that panel, it just has to be set up properly and compliantly. And I think that's one of the biggest things that in the past, I can't really speak for others, but from what I've heard a lot of other AMCs, there's been issues of hey, loan officer sends over a list of five appraisers he wants you to use. Like, that's not compliant. You can't take that direction from the loan officer. It has to come from somebody, who's not on the loan production side. In a lot of instances, that really makes sense. As long as that's done in a compliant manner. If there's, and from an AMC side, a properly comprised panel can make life actually pretty easy on you. If there's 10 appraisers that you have on a panel in a specific market that the lender has instructed you to utilize, first of all, we vet them out. We make sure those appraisers are in good standing. We make sure that they're on our systems. Their fees are set properly, and then we stick to that panel. They'll give us. We'll ask them, look, if we try all the appraisers on your panel and none of them are available for this assignment, do you want us to go ahead and move next to the best appraiser off of our other panel, or do you want us to put it on hold and wait and see, maybe wait for one of those appraisers who might be further out on a turn time or on vacation, what's the instruction there? Are we strictly sticking to that panel, or are we opening it up to our next highest ranked appraisers if those panel appraisers aren't available?
Yeah. I think that's huge. And I also think that, I don't know, at least from my experience, I don't know if we have enough lenders that know that they can have those kinds of conversations. I think a lot of times we come across lenders and they're saying, hey, how do I get my own errors policy set up? And how can I go out and try and deal with all this on my own? And I'm like, listen, don't go that route. It's not going to be worth your time to try and do everything that way. Instead, work with somebody from Strategic Compliance Partners, make sure that you got the right staff in the right positions to have those conversations with the AMC partners like Class.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing right there too is just, a lot of these guys don't know that compliance piece of, hey, my loan officer can't pick his appraiser buddy down the street for this. He's going to get it on point every time. You can't do that.
Right. Yeah. Maybe somebody in the underwriting side, maybe somebody in the QC side that's running in a, kind of a historical pattern of, this appraiser just always we're ending up having to charge the bar X amount of more dollars because we got to go do more curative work or second appraisal or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. And Fannie and Freddie just put out in the last 2 weeks, they just put out some new guidance on AIR, appraiser independence requirements. And I think there's some new things in there, but for the most part, it was really reiterating what's already been in place for a while. And I don't know exactly the reasoning behind it, but I'm sure it's just to kind of reaffirm that, hey guys, this is the way that it works. You can't allow a broker to choose their AMC. You can't allow the original, the actual own officer to choose their AMC or choose the appraiser. So just check and sure. And look, they can call us anytime. If there are any questions about that, but. Yeah, at the end of the day, you need to make sure that your first things first, compliance should always be the first box that you're checking. If you want to run your company and you want it to be long-term sustainable, you're not worried about, the next 6 weeks of loans. You're worrying about the next 6 years. How am I going to make sure that I'm running this business compliantly so I don't have to worry about, trouble down the road? How can I get the best product possible, the best service possible, but not have to worry about, hey, am I doing things the right way? And I think you're right. That's one thing that doesn't get talked about enough, is making sure that you're doing that in a compliant manner.
Yeah. Reduction in units, man. We're seeing it all over the place. It's certainly affecting the warehouse lending business, right? We've seen certainly reduction in credit facilities. We've seen new entrants, right? People that moved away from, retail that are now in the correspondent space, setting up their own companies. We've seen brokers make the transition. We've even had some turnover in our existing book. Valuation's got to be no different, right? You were hit super hard, right? Not only could you, you can't do an appraisal from, sitting in your pajamas like you could as a loan officer. So 2020, 2021, I'm sure was, kind of gangbusters. What's the last 18, 24 months look like for you guys?
It's been tricky, just like it's been for everyone. Obviously every loan, seemingly, we went from so quickly. It wasn't a very gradual shift. It went from rates being so low that refinances were falling out of the sky. And we still had a pretty busy purchase market a while back in 21 to, we went from a point where you know, it's no secret the average appraiser, the average age of the licensed certified appraiser out there, it's pretty high, and that's growing. And I think since 2021, we've seen an actual pretty significant reduction in the number of unique licensed appraisers that are actually out there practicing. So we're definitely doing some things, you know, behind the scenes, and we're working with, you know, some of the players in the industry to help bring more fresh blood into the industry. But the fact of the matter is, to become a licensed or certified appraiser, it's not very easy. There's definitely a time commitment there. I would just say from start to finish to become from ground zero to become an actively licensed or certified appraiser, you're looking at least 2 years. And really at that point, it takes some more time to really get the lay of the land and understand how that works. So we went from an environment where the rates were so low, there was basically a over demand, a massive demand for appraisals and appraisers, and just not enough supply of appraisers. So we had a capacity issue. So those appraisers really, really got stretched thin in 21 and even parts of 22. That's where you saw the 2, 3, 4, 5 week turn times in a lot of markets. To now we had this really quick shift back to so much of that business is dried up. So, you know, now and some appraisers, you know, sort of since COVID have kind of left the space, or if maybe retired or kind of gone more to part-time. The thing I hear a lot nowadays, because the market's slow, you know, rates are high, housing inventory is low. I talked to a lot of lenders that say, hey, you know, appraisals aren't really a problem for us right now. But that's kind of a scary thing to say, because right now is one thing, market's going to turn, and none of us have, you know, crystal ball, but whether it's, you know, in Q4, later in Q3, Q1 of 24, maybe it's 18 months out, but at some point it's going to turn, rates are going to come back down. And I think the rate environment really, you know, rate environment and inventory of housing, they're going to sort of go hand in hand. I can tell you right now, like my wife and I just took a peek at a house a couple months ago, 6-7 blocks away, great house, checks all the boxes, but you know, we're sitting in, we owe barely anything at 2.75%. to jump to this house at 6.75%. It's just a really tough math exercise, and it's more hassle than it's worth. If rates get down to 5.25 or 5.5, you're going to see things loosen up. You're going to see the people that bought at 7, they're going to be refiing, to get back into a lower rate. And then you're going to see the inventory start to open up. But, you know, what comes first there, you know, the chicken or the egg. So that piece of it's been interesting. Fortunately for Class, you know, we've been in acquisition mode. We've been acquiring, small and large competitors, and tucking them into our business. And that's helped us out in a lot of ways. And we've really diversified our portfolio of clients. So we're not so, you know, saturated just in the wholesale space and just the retail space. But it's been a difficult time. I will tell you, when rates inevitably start to go back down and we start to see some more movement and mortgage apps start to increase, you know, there is going to be, without a doubt, I don't know if it's ever going to be like it was in 21, where appraisers are stretched so thin, but you know, you're going to see that strain, and you're going to see certain markets, you know, when those rates drop, where, you know, appraiser capacity is going to be an issue again. I can tell you the biggest thing that we're doing at Class, and I think a lot of the other, you know, a lot of our AMC competitors are doing, and the GSEs are really pushing, is appraisal modernization, the use of, you know, of digital. For years, the way that it's sort of always been since we've been in the industry is the vast majority of appraisals, you know, the appraiser goes to the house, they do the inspection, that can take them 40 minutes, could take them an hour. Then they have their drive time, they go back to the office, and they're typing up the report. That is changing pretty rapidly. And I don't know the exact percentages, but if I had to guess, 90% of appraisals are still being done that way. Maybe 10% of appraisals are being done, where there's a non-appraiser going and inspecting the property and collecting that data. For us, we have, we call it like professional scanners, that they're background checked, and they're using the technology that we have to be able to go and capture all that data. It does a 360 scan of the house. It actually uses LIDAR to do an ANSI scan, ANSI standard, floor plan and measurements of the house. And the appraiser in those instances don't even have to leave their office. The appraiser can sit at their desk. And I think it's actually pretty exciting for the industry, especially with the aging appraiser population, for the average appraiser to be able to do essentially double the amount of jobs. They might make a little bit less per job because they're not doing the inspection and we have to pay the scanner. But I think you're going to see more and more of that, as time goes on, leveraging technology. So we're doing everything we possibly can to help adjust to the changing market. And I think, get comfortable being uncomfortable because the changes, they're not going to slow down. They're going to keep on happening.
No, 100%. So to that end, that's awesome, right? I think constantly looking at ways to be more efficient, which, mortgage space is, always trying to do that, right? It's 230 basis points to originate a mortgage on the average, loan amount. Are you guys, to kind of replenish it? Because if I'm hearing you, it sounds like right now, because of volume reduction, our existing, population of appraisers is getting the job done. Nobody has any, aches or pains, but it sounds like we're pretty much, meeting the, what the whole market needs. But if the market needs starts to increase, there isn't a backflow. So are you seeing anything on your end? I mean, you talk about, the investment and more technology and more resources and more programs, but is there anything at, the collegiate level that's, kind of given young people an idea that, hey, this is something that you might want to look at?
So, the conversations that I've had and from everything I've heard and seen, careful what I say here, but the GSEs, as far as I know, there's no intention in the foreseeable future to eliminate appraisers. We're certainly not trying to eliminate appraisers. This is our lifeblood. This is what we do. But there is a big push towards finding ways to make the appraiser more efficient. I use the analogy quite a bit. When you go get your teeth, when you go to see the dentist, who comes in and cleans your teeth when you get there?
It's the dental assistant.
The oral hygienist, they come in, clean your teeth, do all that stuff, take the x-rays, and then the dentist comes in, and that's the highest and best use of the dentist is to come in and actually do what they went to school for. Come in and do the analytical part, look at your x-rays, kind of look through your teeth and kind of, do what, what they're actually trained to do, in utilizing the other resources they have. If the dentist was in there cleaning your teeth every time, it'd be much more difficult for them to be able to, see as many patients in a day. Kind of the same thing with what we're doing in long-term in bifurcating the appraisal process. And again, it's still growing to that point. This stuff will, I believe, eventually, hopefully sooner or later, all be in policy. Right now, there's certain loan types, right now, purchases, less than 90% LTV under certain circumstances. When loan originator pulls their findings, there's a certain population of loans or appraisals that are eligible for a waiver, which they've changed the names for that. So for Fannie, that's value acceptance, and for Freddie, so there's the straightforward waivers, and then there's a waiver with data collection. So Fannie calls it value acceptance plus PDR, which is property data report. Freddie calls it ACE plus PDR. So we're seeing a lot of that already. So you're still eligible for a waiver, but you need to get an inspection to make sure, sort of some additional due diligence for the stakeholders to know that, making sure that the condition of the property is where it needs to be. And then the next kind of step in the waterfall is the hybrid appraisal or the desktop appraisal, where the appraiser isn't actually inspecting the property, but they have enough data either from an inspector or from whatever other sources to be able to produce a credible report. So that's kind of where we see things going. In terms of getting fresh blood into the industry, that's still difficult. There's been some changes and some, tweaks in terms of, what the threshold is to become licensed or become certified in your state, but it's still difficult. I mean, you can become a licensed loan originator, a real estate agent, far faster than you can become an appraiser. So we're doing a lot of things, working closely with, the largest, education, real estate and mortgage education and appraiser education school in the country, McKissick, which is owned by a company called Calibri. We're working closely with them to try and, you know, bring more fresh blood in. Even the professional scanners that we're sending out, you know, we're trying to, you know, entice some of them if they're interested in this. You know, here's a pathway to, you know, to become a licensed or a certified appraiser. So we're trying to replenish that, but it's some of that stuff doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Looks like you got three new appraisers behind you there. I mean, maybe they could be interested in helping.
Yeah. You know, the way the college is these days, my 12, 10 and 6-year-old daughters, I'm dreading the idea of spending all this money on college because it's just a fortune these days.
Yeah.
It's very different, you know, than it was when we were growing up. So, there's a lot of money to be made in the mortgage space. There's a lot of money to be made in the appraisal space. I think we need to find a way to get that message out there and find ways to get more, you know, really good young blood on all sides of the industry.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know if my daughters are going to fall into the appraisal space or not yet. They're too young. They have other dreams and ambitions at this point. So I don't know if they're stupid or crazy enough to go in that field.
It's always an interesting talk, right? In the mortgage space, you know, well, hey, would you want your kids to get in it? And it's like, some people are like, absolutely not. Hell no. Stay out of this. Yeah. Stay as far as away. There's ups and downs and da, da, da. Yeah. And other guys are like, I've been very fortunate, very blessed by this, you know, this industry. Yes, it's cyclical. Yes, there's ups and downs. But, you know, like you said, John, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in this industry in a variety of ways. I mean, I think it comes up to, I mean, everything centered around housing is somewhere around like 40% of the economy here in the U.S. So, yeah, and I don't think anything's going to happen to people wanting to buy houses and to live in them, et cetera.
So, dream.
Go.
The whole ecosystem, and again, it's just gotten crazy the last couple of years. I mean, even you know, so many young people I know right now, it's they didn't even think about buying a house because they don't want to deal with, you know, bidding up against 10 people for a average house that you know, because of the inventory, or you have, you know, institutional investors that are buying all these houses and renting them out. So we have this big, you know, sort of generation of renters, but as we all know, I mean, you know, renting, you're really throwing your money away. It makes a lot of sense for some people, but in most instances, you know, the long game, it's like buying a car and driving it for a long time as opposed to leasing it every year. I mean, you know, the long-term gain is you know, the housing market's always kind of like the stock market. Through time, owning a home, you're always eventually going to see an increase in value. So,
yeah. So John, if there was one key takeaway, right, for non-Dells in the space working with AMCs, what would you want to leave them with?
Well, you know, I think so many people get really comfortable with where they're at, with what they're doing, and they think what they have is great, or it's fine, or it's acceptable. I think a lot of people are okay with, you know, with mediocre, or they're afraid of change. I'll just say it's kind of like, I think there's a lot of people out there, you know, probably in the space who are just used to flying coach, you know, it would be the analogy, and they've never sat up in first class. They don't know what it's like, you know, and then you get up, you fly first class, and you realize, wow, this is really, you know, if you're going to choose one AMC to work with, you should really go and make sure that you're doing your due diligence and finding the one that's checking all the boxes for you. Like if you have processors who are spending too much time chasing appraisals around, or, you know, they have, you know, frustrations, you know, don't be afraid to get out there and look. It's like if you just, you know, when you get your auto insurance, your homeowner's insurance, so if you just keep re-upping with the same company and not looking at options, you know, you're probably leaving money on the table. Or maybe there's options out there that you're not aware of. Maybe there's other products that are better for you, or other companies that can provide you the same or better coverage with, you know, at a lower cost. Sort of the same thing with AMC space. It's you know, don't be afraid to go out and ask. If you have 500 AMCs to choose from as a correspondent, you know, but you've been working with the same one for a long time, if you're happy with them, that's great. But if you're not necessarily happy with them, don't be afraid to see what's out there, because, you know, there's, you know, the landscape's shifting so quickly. You know, first class, you know, white glove customer service is never going out of style. You know, so I can tell you, like the correspondent brokers that we work with, we build out special teams for them that is basically like a concierge service. Like if you're a Delta Platinum or Diamond, you know, cardholder, you know, if you have a problem, if my mom calls Delta right now, she's going to be sitting on hold for 45 minutes to an hour. If I call Delta, I get someone on the phone in a minute or two. And that's what you should expect as a correspondent, especially if you're pigeonholing yourself into one AMC, you better make sure that AMC, you know, I use the 90-10 rule all the time. I would say for us, and probably the same on the loan side, probably 90% of the loans that the average loan originator does are pretty easy. The other 10% are difficult. When I was appraising houses, I always felt like 90% of those deals I did were super easy, and I probably got slightly overpaid for those. But that other 10% were brutally difficult, and I felt like I probably got grossly underpaid for those. Same thing in the AMC space. You know, that 90% of the time, you know, miraculously, those deals go through pretty smoothly. Is that 10% of the time? Like right now, I just got an email from a really good broker we work with in Kansas City, and they do a ton of volume. And she knows if she needs anything, you know, that's what I do. I deal with brokers all day long, and I'm going to respond to her really quickly and give her exactly what she needs. We've got a team of people that gives them exactly what they need. So, you know, don't settle for just okay. You know, in this market, it's sort of a buyer's market. If you're a correspondent, you know, go out and go figure out what's going to give you the best results and be able to help you run your business more efficiently and not have to focus on things you don't have to worry about.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the time, John. I know you're a busy man. You got a few minutes here before you got to jump to, I'm sure, what is another fire to put out. But we appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. How should they, you know, if we've got our listeners who are like, man, I want to go first class with JT. What's the best way for them to get started with class?
I'm pretty easy to find. Find me on LinkedIn.
Oh, you're the most connected guy in the mortgage space. So,
you know, I'm pretty easy to find. My email is JT. Well, there's my name, you know, JTallinger at classevaluation.com. But in terms of efficiency, I had the IT team build, you know, JT at classevaluation.com. So any questions you guys have, let me know, especially the compliance stuff. You know, sometimes people are afraid to ask because they don't want to sound stupid or sound like they didn't know that. Don't hesitate to reach out, ask, you know, happy to help. Even if you don't work with us, don't have any intention of working with us, even if you have an appraisal that's an appraisal problem, happy to help anytime. I mean, that's kind of what we're here for, is to try and, you know, help make the industry better. So we're here anytime, and you guys keep it up, keep doing a great job. Love seeing you guys out on the road, and I know we're getting into busy fall trade show season here, so our spouses are all going to hate us very soon with all the travel coming up.
That's it, man. Well, hey, I appreciate it. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in. As always, if you have any questions about non-delegated correspondent, warehouse lending, valuation, we have nondelinfluencers.com. There's a ton of information on our website. Please also subscribe, share this with your friends. Any questions from warehouse lending? Myself, I'm with First Funding. Yep. Nick's our senior account executive here as well. Happy to help you guys out. Thanks, everyone, for joining.